Welcome to Season 4 of The Farcast, bringing you experts and insiders every week to help you navigate the economic and investing landscape. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to The Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week as we begin the month of December. And what an interesting winter it's been. I will not really regret saying goodbye to 2020 and welcome in 2021. And I'll take, you know, this is like saying I'll take whatever's behind door number three, and I don't care at this point versus what I've got on hand here for The Price is Right. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, we have markets making new highs. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was above 30,000, now 29, we're still flirting with that. S&P just pulled back from a high. NASDAQ made a new high today. Interest rates have been heading up, which means bonds have been heading down. Interest rates now above 90 basis points, and we're flirting up at 95 basis points. Overall, markets holding in, figuring out what we're going to see until year end and what we might begin to see in 2021 is always a big question for investors. And therefore, we turn to our friend Jim Murio from Chicago, one of the brightest and nicest guys we ever get to talk to. Jim, welcome back to The Farcast.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
We are glad you're here. Jim, tell us, were you excited about the market making new highs? What do you think about Dow 30,000? Should we look for the market to go higher? Should we be worried about the government potential shutdown on the 12th? Will there be a stimulus bill? What do you think?
Okay, well, the Nasdaq's what got us here. So I've been watching the Nasdaq more closely than everything else because I think if a failure in that happens, it could be the beginning of a bit of a correction. Hopefully, within that correction, there's a rotation out of the stay-at-home names into the Russell and maybe some of the S&P 500 stuff that's not has not been run up so greatly over the last 6 or 7 months. And here's what I didn't like about the way the Nasdaq traded today. You just mentioned that it made all-time highs, and it did. But it only basically had a blink and a cup of coffee up there and then rejected those highs and closed kind of sloppily a little bit. So I'm watching it. If it takes out Wednesday's lows, which is around 12,300, I know it's about 150, 200 ticks below where we are right now. But in that Nasdaq, things move pretty quickly, obviously. If it takes that out in the next couple of days, I will think that there is a little bit more of a meaningful correction afoot. And there's a fundamental thing I put behind that as well. We, for three straight Mondays, with the exception of this Monday's, we rallied pretty aggressively on vaccine news. We fully believe that this thing we're going through that you just mentioned, and I have a funny thing to say about that in a second, but the thing that you mentioned, we fully believe that that's going to be over in the spring, at least the market does. I don't see much more good news to be priced in. And at that point in time, I think it's ripe for a bit of a pullback. The funny story real quick, too, is last in the middle of February, I tweeted that my favorite day of the year is March 1st, because on March 1st, the worst part of winter is over and yes, everything starts to look better. That is the absolute worst tweet of the entire universe. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to bet that probably you can welcome this March 1st with much greater confidence. There's always an aberration in there. Jim, I've been saying that I don't think that it has to be a rotation out of tech. I'm still not seeing necessarily. I could see a tech pullback, but I don't think that a market breadth with all of this cash out there, there's so much cash out there to be invested, and interest rates remain so low. I think we can have a broadening and an extension of a broad market rally in a lot of the value names and a lot of the industrial names and in some of the names that have been, sort of beaten up during COVID and maybe the bounce back names. But I don't necessarily think it's got to be at the expense of tech. But I do think that tech is expensive and that you've got to be very cautious if you're committing new dollars today. Does that make sense to you?
It makes perfect sense to me. And just to put a little more context to what I said, too, I think if tech starts to break down, and it could start to break down because – the rotation is starting to happen. But I think, you know, markets don't like when things seem to become dislocated. And I, like I said, I think it could cause a correction. I'm not talking about an end of the world correction. It's so funny. I saw someone tweet the other day, the stock market is down 0.75%. Who do we talk to about this? I mean, stocks go up, stocks go down. So to me, to have a 5% correction, to 5 to 8% correction, I think not only would it be fine, I think it would be in some ways healthy, but I worry that we could thread the needle of a rotation. I don't think that's an easy thing to do, because no. I think as soon as money starts coming out of tech, all of a sudden it makes people a little bit worried. So that's why I'm a little bit more cautious right now than you usually hear me, obviously.
And you know, what I do in terms of as an investor is kind of long-term stuff. People ask me during the day, they'd see me out on the street and they go, hey, Michael, what's the stock market doing today? I don't know what the stock market's doing today. I mean, maybe I've looked, maybe I haven't looked. I don't care what the stock market's, you know, the 200 points in one direction or the other today doesn't matter to what I do as an investor, right? So, because I don't trade. Tell me at the end of the week.
My time frames are a little different than yours. I mean, I'm an investor also, and I like to look, even in investing things, I like to pick good entry points and lighten up and rebalance when the situation presents itself. But my time frame, I'm looking at, you know, the next like month or two. So when I say a significant correction, I'm talking about something that could be long in the rearview mirror by the time, you know, mid-March comes, a couple months down the road. So I'm not moving any long-term money around. There was a time about a month ago, which seems inopportune at this moment, where I looked at the risk I was taking on my long-term things, and I moved some things around in the name of rebalancing. But that's because I'm a scaredy cat. I was born to be a risk mitigator. I don't know. I wonder sometimes being a trader is the right thing to do, because sometimes when I get my profits, I like to bury them and guard them like a dog with a bone.
Well, you know, it's the guy who knows when to walk out of the casino is the fella who can typically pay for his own dinner. You know, you have to.
Amen.
you have to know when to push away, and because, you know, sooner or later the house is going to win. You got to be very careful. Okay, we're looking at two dates here, Jim, in D.C. Two dates in D.C. are important. December the 12th is important, and January the 5th. And I want your take, because I think they could be very important to markets too. On December the 12th, the House has to approve ongoing funding. They run out of government. They've got to fund the government. Of course, the Electoral College gets certified. I don't think that's a big deal. But what's happening is on that bill that they've got to vote on, they're tacking on some sort of stimulus, whether it's $500 billion or $1 trillion, seems to be an argument. Whether we get it, whether we don't get it, what's going to happen there? Somehow that stimulus is more and more sounding like it's priced in. We saw stocks do a little bit better today based on McConnell being optimistic. How important to the year-end close on stocks and this continued rally do you think another stimulus bill is?
I think it's very important. I think if we went through the next couple of weeks and it was dropped and they couldn't agree, so it came out to nothing, I think it could be not totally similar to when they voted it down back in 07 or whenever that was, when the first round of the big stimulus package. But I think it could be detrimental to markets, particularly if it fits into my thesis of the potential for sort of corrective types of trade over the next couple of weeks. If we're already sucking wind a little bit and something like that happens, I think it could be bad. I think it's, again, you and I are mostly for government standing out of the way, and we would normally be against stimulus packages.
Yes.
I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I think there's extenuating circumstances here. If the government tried what I think was a ridiculous and misplaced policy of locking down the country and destroying the economy, that's, you know, neither here nor there. But if they're going to institute those policies, this is the perfect time for deficit spending to bail people out. The problem is they won't leave after this is gone. I mean, what, you know, they'll keep spending money. They were spending money before. But right now I'm for them spending some money. So I think it's a big deal. And I think if they disappoint the markets will punish them.
The problem is they never leave, Jim. They never leave.
Never
in Washington,
leave.
You know, and people keep saying, you know, in Washington, I love the new real estate agents, because I was born in Washington. I'm a fifth generation Washingtonian, and new real estate agents will come in and say, well, wait till the 4-year transition and people are selling their houses and buying their houses. They don't sell. They don't leave Washington. They become lobbyists. Nobody's leaving this trough. There's a too damn much. They don't leave. They just change hats. And by the way, every time someone, you can be a one-term congressman, you know, back in 1976, those people still walk around and say, "Hi, I'm Congressman Smith. Hi, I'm Congressman Smith."
No, you're not. You're not Congressman anymore. I hear it all the time, right?
Oh, God, it's the title they use for life. It's fabulous. God, okay.
You know, I hate and mistrust government. And I've grown up in, you know, in the Midwest. If I was grew up where you grew up, I'd be apoplectic regarding these people, I think.
And the ones, my favorite ones are the freshman congressmen, and I should have more respect, but sorry, I don't.
Sorry.
Yeah, I am kind of sorry. I mean, I do have respect for these folks. They've done a lot, and they're going to give, you know, government service and come in and do, I hope, with a good heart. But, you know, the ones who come in for the freshman congressmen and say, "I am Congressman so-and-so. You must know me." Know you. I don't even bother learning your name till your third term. You people come in and out of here. I mean, it's like a bus station. Oh, well. Okay. The next day, the next important date, January 5th, markets are expecting Republicans to retain control of the Senate. That's the date of the Georgia vote, is January 5th. I don't know if we're going to know on January 5th who won. I don't know if we're going to have mail-in ballots. I don't know who's going to accuse what of whom. But I know that somewhere after that January 5th, it's very important to markets that Republicans keep one vote there so that they're not all these huge tax changes. Do you see that as important as I see it?
I bet I see it more important than you. I think it's monumental. I think it's enormous. I think if the market gets wind that the Democrats will have the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and things, because both sides, we know that there's going to be tons of spending. You know what I mean? Some people
say,
the Democrats are spendthrifts. Guess what? So are the Republicans. They're all spendthrifts. But if they think that those tax plans, and I realistically, when you hear Joe Biden talk about his tax plan too, I don't even think he wants to enact those taxes. I think he
I don't either. I agree with you. I haven't heard anybody say that, but I agree.
No, and I think that if he all of a sudden has the Senate and the Congress and the House, he'll be like, "Oh, crap, maybe I actually have to do some of these things I said, or else I'm going to feel pressure from the outside." So that's my biggest worry, is that those two seats get lost and all of a sudden we have all one side. You remember, the market likes the government not to be able to do things. Guess why? Every time the government does things, not every time, obviously, but it comes out poorly. So they like a handcuffed government.
I've got one final theory I've been thinking about. I'm just going to run it by you. Janet Yellen was dovish as a Fed chairman. I'm thinking as Treasury Secretary, she is going to lean back into a bunch of this tax law change, because I think she is genuinely going to be concerned about what increased taxes would do to kill this fledgling, fragile economy. Do you think that Yellen has enough stuff, along with Powell, to shut down any major tax hike changes, no matter whether they get a blue wave or not?
Well, God, I hope so. Certainly, I think the answer to that is probably yes. You know, the market loved the announcement of Janet Yellen
that
was last week. But that's, you and I both know, that's partly because one of the other names that was being knocked around was Elizabeth Warren. And the market really should have known that wasn't going to happen, too, because they didn't want a Republican governor appointing that seat, obviously. But the fact that Janet Yellen's not Elizabeth Warren was a beautiful thing for markets. And I think the market was also telling us the same thing you are, too. She seems reasonable compared to what we've seen. And I hate to be dogging the left just all the time, because there's radical people on both sides. But she seems reasonable compared to the fringe elements of her particular party. So I think what you're saying is makes sense to me. It's reasonable.
Well, and I'm not saying it as a party choice. I'm not saying it as opposed to alternatives. I'm just saying that as a former Fed chair, as an accomplished economist, as a Harvard professor of economics with a Yale degree in economics, she's focused on the economy, and she knows what higher taxes will do to kill economic growth, and we can't afford it. We're already, people, a lot of people are talking about the risk of a double-dip recession if we don't get some sort of stimulus now. So I think there's still reason to be concerned. I'm listening to Jay Powell say the same thing. Jim, I'm already out of time here. I can't thank you enough. Anything before year end, Jim, before we hear, are you making any changes, anything investors should be thinking about?
Well, the thing that people should be looking at, you know, we already talked about the stock part of this, the commodity part of this too, gold, you know, gold got the heck beaten out of it because of this Bitcoin thing. Because the fundamental thesis for gold still exists. Obviously, a profligate spending government and a dovish Fed. I've gotten back into gold recently.
Have you?
I'm going to look at miners and things like that. Well, I was out, then I was in. I mean, people on Twitter who followed me knows that I made money and then I lost money, but now I'm in again, and the position's looking pretty good as it bounced off that 1775 level. I think gold looks pretty good. I also think Bitcoin, and I know, you know, Stanley Druckenmiller's talked about it. Paul Tudor Jones has talked about it. I'm getting calls from everybody all the time, which means it's probably a high in Bitcoin. But for the long term, it seems to me to be worried about cavalier currency policies and start looking for things that hedge your risk against that. I'm working on a paper on that, you know, I'll send to you as soon as I'm done.
Will you? That'd be great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Urio is managing director at TJM Institutional Services, a veteran futures and options trader, terrific contributor on CNBC, one of the best you're going to listen to on CNBC. Take it off of mute and listen to Urio. He's also a great friend of mine. Jim Urio, thanks so much. Hope to talk to you soon. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back with Dan Mahaffey. We're going to talk politics. We're going to talk about what's going on in Washington. Will Donald Trump run for president again? Is Joe Biden making the right decisions with his economic appointments? When we come back on the Farcast.
The Farcast is sponsored in part by Positano Restaurante in Bethesda, Maryland, 4940 Fairmont Avenue. Positano Restaurant, great Italian food. And now back to the show and your host, Michael Farr. Welcome back to the Farcast, and now here's your host, Michael Farr.
We're back. I am Michael Farr with the Farcast. Thanks so much. Dan Mahaffey joining us now from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, and most important, the senior political analyst for 4 years now on the Farcast. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Michael. 4 years, a full term.
A full term. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you all would be glad to know there was an election, and Mr. Mahaffey received the necessary votes to now be the once again the incumbent and the next president-elect or analyst, or senior political analyst-elect. We're going to have our own ceremonies in Washington that are going to involve very thick steaks and a lot of whiskey as soon as COVID rules allow for his inaugural dinner. Anyway, Dan, we're glad that you made it and the voters supported you once again.
And I didn't even have to bring out the Island of Misfit Toys legal team to secure my victory. So it's been great working with you, and hopefully things don't get too boring in a Biden administration.
Well, they're starting to trend that way. You know, Dan, someone was asking me, how do you characterize this shift in administrations? I said I feel the way I felt when we transitioned from Nixon to Ford. We went through all of the brouhaha, and, you know, President Ford was a very honorable, thoughtful guy who was criticized for being clumsy. He would stumble. He would do this and that, and his Midwest sort of aw shucks personality versus, you know, Richard Nixon's intense needled approach to the world. It was kind of a relief when Ford showed up, whether you like Nixon or not. And there were a number of things that Nixon did that I did actually like. So, Dan, tell us where we are right now. Give us the political landscape from Washington.
Well, the political landscape, so much is hanging on Georgia. And Georgia, as we've discussed, is complicated by the continuing Schrodinger's result of this election. That is, for most of America, President-elect Biden moving on for his transition, and that this Georgia race would be a question of who controls the Senate. But for a large swath of the Republican Party, and we saw it yesterday in the 46-minute bizarre speech, one of the most bizarre addresses I've ever seen a sitting U.S. president deliver from the White House, where President Trump went through this litany of election conspiracy theories, and for so many in the Republican Party, how they handle this continued contestation of the results, along with the matter of moving on to Georgia, determining who are the kingmakers in the party. So much of this hinges on accepting the results of this election, and clearly that speech shows we're not there yet.
There's been some criticism, Dan, that President Trump, in continuing the argument for his election, for the rigging of the election, may be discouraging Georgia Republicans from showing up to the polls on January 5th. Do you think that's a valid argument? Do you think that Republicans will be turned away? And at what point does Donald Trump turn around and say, wait a minute, we need those, all of you, to get out there and vote, because we certainly need to keep the Senate and I need to be an influential Republican?
Right. So we may see that on Saturday when he goes down to Georgia. It's going to be interesting to see his rhetoric, how he talks about Governor Kemp, how he talks about Secretary of State Raffensperger down there, whether he starts, dog whistling about certain counties' vote totals. All of that will be a question to see. One, as you mentioned, we've seen on social media where conservatives are saying, look, we need to sit out Georgia to protest the betrayal of the establishment Republicans. So you have that. At the same time, the crazier these statements are and some of the crazier stuff you see down in Georgia on the campaign trail, that stuff like Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell, these lawyers who even the president has disavowed, that turns off that swing suburban voter that was actually so key to Biden winning Georgia in the first place. Combine that with the Stacey Abrams turnout machine. That's why I still say that I still stand by that 45% chance of Democrats winning this. And they even have polls, and we won't even get into the polls because after what happened in the last election, but there are polls that look favorable for Democrats right now in Georgia.
Are they doing mail-in voting in Georgia for this Senate election?
They are. There's a lot of that. There's going to be that again. The rules will much be the same. The interesting thing, though, is that people who did not vote in the past election but have since become eligible, either by moving Georgia or turning 18, are eligible to vote in the runoff. And that's a major target, too, for people trying to register new voters for this. But it's going to be very similar. The mail-in ballot circumstances will take place. So you're going to, it could have, again, early January, a week-long wait to see what the Senate results actually are. We could have that again.
What did it mean when Attorney General Bill Barr came out and said that there was no voter fraud that they detected and that he kind of walked it back and said they'll pursue if they find any, but that they hadn't found any? For the Attorney General to do that, that seemed to be a fairly big step away from President Trump.
Right. And that is, I think, the Attorney General saying, boss, I've carried this as far as I can. I can go no further. There are certain things you can say from a podium. There are certain things you can say in a press availability. You can't say those things when you lie before a judge in a court of law. And that's where we've arrived at. And so the Attorney General, I think, is saying, look, there's no way to continue, at least in the realm of what the Justice Department can do. Now, that doesn't mean the civil lawsuits won't try and continue, although we just saw one thrown out by the Wisconsin Supreme Court today as well. So the Attorney General saying that the fat lady has begun to sing. It's time to look to either 2024 or beyond. And I think that's what we'll probably perhaps see. If there's no formal concession or polite handoff, I don't think we can expect that of any kind, but starting to position themselves for the future.
If I remember the last election, the next election starts almost immediately. We used to get a couple of years of reprieve, but if as memory serves, we get, a whole crop of the party not in office coming out to say, wait a minute, look at me. How quickly? I mean, I think John Delaney was the first one to announce, and it was really 4 years in advance. Do you think that happens again from the Republican side if the president says, I'm going to run?
Well, you can only book a plane ticket to Iowa a year out, but still the people are going to try. You're going to hear the details. I think, yeah, look, the president's already making noises about running again in 2024. You've heard stories, some of the inside gossip of Pompeo Haley, Pence, others who've been in the administration trying to position themselves, those in the Senate. It's a challenge, though, for any of those trying to run in 2024 to separate themselves from what the president is saying about this election, given the sway that he'll continue to have over the what they presume the sway he'll have over the Republican voters. The simple fact for some of these Republicans is that even though they lost statewide, you know, they would lost to Biden, Trump still brought out the most votes they've seen for Republicans in their state. That's the paradox they face in charting this path forward. And then when you start to hear stories about, you know, the rumors today that Donald Trump Jr. wants to become head of the NRA, the National Rifle Association.
What? Yeah. Tell me that.
So the rumors are now that Donald Trump Jr. is maneuvering the NRA is certainly due for it's a turnaround story from a management standpoint if you look at the scandals they've had lately, but also a very powerful fundraising and get out the vote tool on the right that they want to have that Donald Trump Jr. could be the head of to help again ingratiate the Trumps and integrate them further into the infrastructure of Republican politics.
Washington facts are stranger than fiction. Just remember, you heard it here first, folks. So we have this bill or continuing resolution for December 12th. We're running out of time here, Dan. We've got to keep moving. And they're saying that what I'm reading is they're going to attach some sort of stimulus bill to that. The headline on CNBC right now, CNBC.com, says Pelosi McConnell speak as Congress rushes to strike a COVID stimulus deal. What it used to say was Pelosi and Mnuchin speak. Mm-hmm. Why is it saying now McConnell? And does that mean anything in Washington? All this sort of stuff means something in Washington. I just never know what. What does it mean?
Right. Be it Kremlinology or Kabuki, what it means in Washington is that we're moving towards something that could actually happen. Whatever Mnuchin was negotiating, he was simply trying to get the White House possibly on board for something to possibly whip Republican senators. With McConnell now, we know we're getting to something where at least, look, I think we're going to see a continuing resolution package that keeps government open till March of next year, probably, that kicks the can on that down the road. And then I think a modest, along the lines of what we saw some of these senators propose earlier in the week, a $900 billion range that would provide some money to states and localities, money for testing, vaccine rollout, and perhaps some of the extended PPP monies, but nothing of the really controversial stuff like the big ticket items or further direct stimulus payments to individuals.
The president will sign it if it passes both houses?
That is a question we don't know right now. He's threatening to veto the defense authorization, the other clockwork type piece of legislation, over the renaming of Confederate bases and the 230 protections for social media companies liability. That's another thing to get in the weeds on, but he is threatening to veto these bills if he doesn't get his way. But look, Chairman Inhofe of the Senate Armed Services Committee moved the defense bill without with changing Confederate names and without changing any 230 protections for big tech. So that just tells me that Congress is now kind of daring the lame duck president to veto them.
Dan, what are you going to watch for the next week in Washington? What's the most important thing you're watching? And we got to go.
For me, it's continuing to watch what voices in the Republican Party finally start to speak up and say that this is over and it goes for the sake of the country, for the sake of democracy. I think it's important to build on ones like Adam Kinzinger, Liz Cheney, Mitt Romney. They deserve credit for speaking out on this. But I want to keep an eye on who else starts to say that around town here.
Next week, I'm going to ask you for your prediction for the first Republican to announce for president in 2024. But that'll be for next week, Dan. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Mahaffey is the director of policy at the Center for the Study of the Presidency in Congress, the senior political analyst on the Farcast. Dan, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Happy as always. Thank you, Michael.
When we come back, folks, we're going to hear from Mark Hamrick, one of our Farcast fan favorites, so we're giving us some insight into economics and Washington when we come back on the Farcast.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Farcast. We'd like to invite you to follow Michael on Twitter and LinkedIn. On his social media feed, you'll find links to all of Michael's media appearances, articles he's been quoted in such newspapers as The Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, and, of course, The Farcast. Additionally, Michael shares some of the articles we are reading at Farmiller in Washington every morning that we feel have bearing on the investing landscape. That's Michael_K_Farr on Twitter and Michael Farr on LinkedIn. And now, back to Michael and The Farcast. Thank you for joining us on The Farcast. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. Thanks so much for being with us again this week. Terrific Farcast tonight with Jim Murio, Dan Mahaffey, and now, the piège de résistance. Mr. Mark Hamrick is Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate and Bankrate.com. Used to be with the Associated Press. He was president of Cebu. He was president of the National Press Club. He has been a vocal advocate for press freedom and transparency, and he has been a great friend of mine for well more than 20 years. Welcome back to the Farcast, Mark.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Well, we're living in interesting times here, coming into the end of the year. 1 month left for 2020, and I can't wait for this one just to be in the rearview mirror. I don't know about you. We're coming up and looking at the economy, which seems to be looking a little bit fragile. Stock markets are looking very positive. Tell us what you make of all of it.
Obviously, Michael, we have to level set, I think, on an almost daily basis and try to reorient ourselves as to what it is we are experiencing, what we have experienced and what we expect. And I think part of that level setting is just sort of reminding ourselves that there was a life before the pandemic. Things changed dramatically in ways that we could have never reasonably expected. But also, for the most part, there's been remarkable innovation and reaction to that. But obviously, many people are suffering. Many businesses have suffered, and there's been this, as you mentioned at the top, the remarkable performance of the stock market, not only broadly, but in its complicated ways, sort of below the surface as well. Yeah. But even as we speak, Michael, you know, I was preparing a segment for the Weather Channel, of all places, which wants to talk about the consumer. And, you know, when we sort of bring things back to the bank rate realm, which is all about personal finance, and trying to just help people accomplish broadly their financial goals, whatever they might be. I was starting to anticipate or thinking about the fact that, you know, during what might otherwise be, let's say, broadly a difficult holiday shopping season, at least right. For the retail trade, right. That there is going to be, consistent with the stock market theme, there is going to be this pent-up demand. And I'm thinking about the fact that consumers might actually overdo it on the other side. Right. So there's this sort of austerity, somewhat self-enforced right now. But then there's going to be the other part about, you know, how many baseball games do people want to go to? How much are they going to dine out, and how often are they going to go to brick and mortar stores? And so, you know, there's going to be much the same as we had this hitting the brick wall. I think there's going to be this kind of roller coaster launch for those that are still financially qualified coming out of this, and it's going to be quite remarkable.
I like the idea of going to pretty much every baseball game I possibly can. I mean, where I used to just say, well, yeah, okay, or I'm not going to go this week, I'll go next week. No, I don't want to miss a game now all of a sudden. Anything to get out and go and do it,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And you miss it. You really miss it desperately now and realize. And I think we've had a chance to revalue things a bit. So, Mark, you mentioned the Weather Channel and the consumer. We always used to look at basically the gift-giving season, December, month of December, and of course, Black Friday and everything else for all of the holiday shopping, and say, well, you know, you hope for a milder winter because that's going to be better for the economy. It allowed people to go out and shop and do those things. Do people go out and shop anymore? Does the weather matter?
Well, the retail trade thinks it does, and maybe we should take some of that with a grain of salt, because I do
think... Does Jeff Bezos think it matters?
Well, he would love it if we're all unable to get out of the house, right?
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Still need to get those trucks on the road, because the five-year timeline of getting the drones in the air didn't exactly happen. But I do think that, people aren't canceling Christmas. They might be canceling their in-person get-togethers, but as we've seen, the shippers are going to be hustling like nobody's business here, and that's going to present some challenges. But obviously for Jeff Bezos and company, those omnichannel retailers, they are going to be doing a brisk business, no doubt.
Right. And, the folks at UPS and FedEx, they don't even care. They've got more boxes than they can possibly carry, it looks like. I mean, they're giving restrictions to certain retailers as to the amount of shipping they're going to provide them. That's amazing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, and the Postal Service is saying, you better get it in the mail by December 15th. So, we've got our deadlines here.
Mark, give us your view on the economy now. Where are we in terms of this recovery? And I'm hearing a worried Jay Powell. Do you hear him worried? Do you agree with him? What are your thoughts and what's your forecast here?
Well, I think about the fact that when Jay Powell speaks, or whether it's Robert Kaplan of the Dallas Federal Reserve, who I'm very fond of in terms of his intellect and his observations, leaving aside that he's a fellow Jayhawk. I think that you got to remember that they've got a lot of brain power and research behind them. So this isn't just them going outside on their front porch and sticking a thumb in the air.
Way I do it?
So there's a lot of wisdom and data behind them. But there's also the part where they enunciate the risk associated with uncertainty. And so I think right now, this is probably as among the uncertain times that we've experienced since this began, to the extent that we ever had a solid idea about what was happening, with the reminder that there is that light at the end of the tunnel, but we're still in the tunnel, and we think that much better things are happening on the other side of it. So, the pandemic has roared, at levels that I don't think any of us could have reasonably expected. And there is an economic cost to that. But the other part is, to the resilience part, is that consumers and businesses broadly, not everyone and not all entities, have really reacted, with remarkable resilience to this. And so while we may see, a huge number of store closing announcements in 2021, we'll see innovation and new ways of doing business in ways that we couldn't possibly have expected before. And just before we came on the air here, the announcement that essentially the idea of rolling out Warner Brothers films to a longer window has basically been thrown out the window, right? And so that's a good example of innovation which might persist, might not. I'm sure they'd much rather have people paying the higher movie ticket prices, and the theater owners would love that too. But, and then you've had the likes of Bill Gates talking about the possibility of a 50% long-term decline in business travel, which feels aggressive to me in terms of a forecast. But I think what we want to think about is that 2021 will probably end up being a strong year for growth if we can get past the first quarter, which may still be slow, and we'll make up a lot of that.
I'm hearing Mark Hamrick, long-term optimistic on the U.S. economy if we can get past the first quarter. We're at a fragile period now. Is it fragile enough that we could end up with a double-dip recession if we have a further shutdown? Whether it's not government-imposed, but it's just all that has to happen is people stay home and stop spending and stop being active. That's just as effective if they choose to do it as if somebody tells them to do it. Are you concerned about a double-dip recession? How important is this stimulus package? You're in Washington. Are we going to get this stimulus package?
Well, the question really ultimately is, has Mitch McConnell actually ventured past the point of no return where he will actually accept an agreement that otherwise seems to have bipartisan support. And it feels like we're getting close to that point. President Trump, and this isn't a political statement, doesn't really seem to be present in the job anymore, but he did seem to raise his hand and say, I will support something reasonable that comes to my desk, to paraphrase. So, maybe the smart money says a stimulus bill of some kind does get passed, and that's probably taking an optimistic or almost charitable view of the effectiveness of our elected officials. But I think that's where I'm going to lean with that. And so with that, I'm probably going to say that I'm betting against an actual double dip. But the risks are high, and that's a function of uncertainty. And it's also with the faith and the knowledge that we do get to a better place, because the science has come through, it appears. Right? I mean, we know that the vaccines, based on what we're told and what we have reason to believe, will be safe and effective. Operation Warp Speed does seem to, sort of be the modern equivalent of the Persian Gulf War with Norman Schwarzkopf.
Look, I think the president should get some real credit for Warp Speed. I mean, it has been remarkable. He's been pushing this, and he really he said we're going to do it. He was carte blanche, pedal to the metal, and we've done it. I understand folks who don't like President Trump, but you do have to give the devil his due. Even for those who don't like him, he's done some things that really have been very good for the country, and that's certainly one of them. I think, if that's political, well, then I'll accept that. Let me ask a political question now, Mark. How, for Wall Street now, how important is it for Republicans to win one of those seats in Georgia?
My own opinion is it's not important at all.
Terrific.
Yeah, that's my own view, because I think that, everyone, not everyone, but all too many people these days are sort of playing the tribal politics card. And we've probably talked before, Michael, that the research doesn't necessarily bear out the argument that we need to have a totally unproductive Congress. In fact, I'm of the opinion that the time has come that we need to have some solutions to structural problems in this country, because the structural problems are mounting. Whether it's climate change or lack of investment in infrastructure, or even addressing some of the intermediate term ills of the economy, I think that it's a cop out to say that we need to bet on divided or ineffective government. And just to your point earlier, I want to back what you're saying about Operation Warp Speed, but broaden it out and say, yes, thank God for the U.S. Army, the U.S. military, which reminds us, with Dr. Fauci, who's become politicized, is that we actually do need government, okay? We don't want to live in a jungle where we're going to be killed by a tiger, okay? And so investing in infrastructure and getting broadband to communities that are far away from cities and allowing those children to study remotely, and not to mention their parents to work that way, or coming up with sensible solutions to climate change, because as one local official said who was Republican living precariously close to a rising sea level, we don't have the luxury to engage in climate change denial, okay? So now how you get to those solutions, that's another question. But, whether it's the UK, whether it's China, whether it's California, whether it's Elon Musk, EVs are coming. And that's perhaps the private sector's response largely.
Right.
And consumers, I think, ultimately will help to make that happen.
Well, what I was hearing, though, Mark, was more about the proposed tax changes. And if those tax changes go through, Wall Street people are telling me that they need a Republican majority, even one in the Senate, to ensure against those tax increases, both in capital gains taxes and corporate taxes and other things. That was sort of the fear that people were responding to.
Michael, I get that, but people have very short-term memories on Wall Street, like they do everywhere else, and they forget that the Trump tax cuts will expire in a few years. So it's not only a question of what President-elect Biden would like to do, leaving aside the question question of whether he can do those things. But the other part is that we've had higher tax brackets in the past, as you know as well as anybody, and the economy could perform well under those circumstances. And, oh, by the way, you actually do need some tax law changes to address the debt and deficits that were created by those tax cuts before. So, again, we want to level set a little bit and just try to bring, you know, not a long-term perspective from history, but one that goes back to 2016.
Finally, Mark, and I can't believe we're out of time. I just absolutely can't believe how quickly this goes when we get to talk to my friend Mark Hamrick. As you look at earnings recovering on an economy that's recovering in 2021, what do you think about prospects for an S&P 500 return for investors?
Well, that's a great question, Michael. And I guess, you know, I think that I probably need to stay in my bank rate lane and to say that I'm not too terribly focused on that, even though I know that's a key to your work and ultimately the key for investors. But what I would say is if I stick to the bank rate mantras, I would say that for the bulk of the people that we are writing to on our site, we want to think about really the long term. And to that degree, we're almost like sort of trying to hitch a ride on the horse that Warren Buffett might be steering. And that is that I have no idea what tomorrow brings, but I think I have a pretty good idea about what the long term brings. And in the long term, absolutely need to be invested in equities. You know, there's especially in this low interest rate environment where the Federal Reserve is almost, you know, trying to implore us into believing that interest rates will remain low, you know, almost forever, which in this iteration is to 2023 or so. But I think that playing into the question, which ends up being another question, is what is the risk that the economy does have that roller coaster slingshot late next year, and then the assumptions about interest rates end up being wrong? And then how does that play into the equity or investing environment? And I think that's one of the mysteries that I'm going to be very fascinated to see play out. But still having faith that one way or the other, being exposed to the stock market and having a substantial interest in equities is something that we need to be doing.
We hope that you're going to come back and talk to us about that and help explain it to us and help us navigate through these things. You are one of the greatest folks we get to talk to. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Hamrick is Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com, right down at the National Press Building, a great friend of mine and one of the brightest and nicest guys you're ever going to want to talk to in our business. Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
Always my great pleasure, my friend. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for us. Another week, another Farcast. We'll be back again with you next week as we help navigate all that's going on in Washington, on Wall Street, and around the world. In Naples, Florida tonight, I'm Michael Farr. Thanks so much for being with us. Please share us on social media. We'll be back next week.